Welcome back to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. In this half hour, we'll be talking about teaching online. Joining us now via Zoom is Nina Mondre-Schweppe. Nina teaches several courses at Montana State University, both online and in person, in the Honors College and the College of Letters and Sciences. She also works with the Center for Faculty Excellence at MSU to support faculty in achieving excellence in teaching, research, scholarship, and service. Over the past few months, Nina has also been coordinating a National Science Foundation-funded study on the effects of COVID-19 on graduate students. Nina, could you please start by telling us a little bit about the Center for Faculty Excellence and the role it played last spring in the emergency transition to online teaching and learning?
So the Center for Faculty Excellence, as you know, is a center on campus. It's an arm of the provost's office, and it takes care of faculty in a regular year, pedagogy, instructional design, anything related to teaching that includes workshops on, active learning, how to implement, indigenous ideas and content into curricula. And it's across the board in terms of what faculty needs on a sort of day-to-day basis to make their courses work, and then also with a focus on research and scholarship and service, including retention and that sort of thing. So this
year was different, though, or last year?
Much different, yeah. So by the time March rolled around last year, it was around the time of NCUR, which didn't end up happening because of COVID-19. And that's when the Center for Faculty Excellence sort of stepped in to assist faculty in transitioning the courses online. So for the majority of the courses that were mostly taught in person that didn't have any aspect of it online, there was that period during spring break where there were a number of different workshops to help faculty, everything from setting up a Brightspace to, basics in coordinating what you need to do in order to get all the content that you've kind of created and intended for an in-person setting online. So that's kind of the role that it played in the transition to online. It was really quick. It was all hands on deck. It was fast and furious, but we managed to get everybody online. And it wasn't perfect. It was far from perfect. But it did manage to keep the students feel like there was some continuity in their studies. Nobody felt like they were left high and dry. And it meant the world to students who had kind of been expecting NCUR and then had to transition all of that research and those ideas into an online setting without the sort of follow through.
You said NCUR. What is NCUR?
I don't know what it stands for anymore. But it's the
what is it?
It's a national research for undergraduate research. And it travels around the states. And so last year it was supposed to be held at Montana State. So there was a fair amount of work that went into coordinating the space for it, the expectation of having thousands and thousands of people on campus. It was probably going to be the year's biggest event by far.
Wow. And when was it supposed to be?
Right after spring break, so right in that week in March, yeah.
Oh, goodness, that must have been very disorienting and disappointing for people.
Yeah, I think it was. So, we didn't gather in any public space at that point, so we didn't hear much about it. But there were such high hopes, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, so you did not have a mellow spring break, quite the opposite, but you were able to get people online. So I know you don't just work at the center, you also teach, and my understanding is that you were doing some online teaching even before COVID. So we'll talk about other faculty's experience and also student experiences, but just how was it for you personally making that transition?
For the course that I had that was already online, um, I I just changed some of the content to make it a little bit more relatable to the current events. So the class I teach is a global film course, and basically allows students to kind of explore different ideas and films from all over the world. And one of the things that we did sort of as a consensus once we went all online, we were already online, so that didn't change much for my students. And but it didn't seem right to continue on as though everything was just sort of fine and we were going to follow the syllabus through to its logical conclusion. So we had some discussion and we decided that we would change some of the films. And so I showed a film about the Ebola epidemic, and you know, we kind of had discussions based on, you know, how our current situation connected to some of the ideas that we sort of looked at in the films over the course of the semester. So that didn't change a whole lot in terms of, you know, what we were actually doing. It's an asynchronous class, meaning that we don't meet all together. Students from all over the country and sometimes out of the country get to log in, and they get to, you know, do the work and connect with students that way. But then there was also the courses that I was teaching in person. Those I transitioned online, and those were synchronous. So that meant we did meet at the same time that we met each week, and we did try to keep, you know, the sort of seminar style going for the remainder of the semester. And I could see that it weighed pretty heavily on students to kind of log in. They did say that they were really happy that they got to, you know, see each other each week at the same time. But you could see that, you know, being at home and seeing only the four walls of their bedroom was starting to take a toll by the time we hit the end. But it also did, you know, enrich our discussions in a way that maybe was a little bit more forthcoming for students who weren't so comfortable speaking in a classroom setting. You know, there were some students of mine who were more comfortable speaking, you know, in a video chat versus, you know, a bigger classroom setting, which was kind of nice to see because it changed the dynamic a little bit from what we were used to when we were all sitting together in the same room.
Yeah. So here we are in Bozeman, Montana, but I want to go back to the class you had been teaching online. That has a global theme, and I know that you are fluent in several languages and have lived on several continents. I would like to know sort of how your background shapes that global course, but then also it sounds like you were having students from around the world participate during the time of COVID. How was that?
It's always really interesting. This I've taught this course now for the third time, and it's always really encouraging to see the variety of disciplines and students that it attracts. So I had some students who were still in the country, but who were elsewhere for whatever reason, who had traveled and not had the chance to return. I had one student who was stationed in the Middle East. He never said exactly where. So it was sort of a variety of time zones that we were kind of working with, and also a variety of perspectives, which is really important for the course and kind of what the students bring to the table in a course about global film. I guess to answer your question about how my experiences sort of informed that course, I mean, growing up in three different languages means that I'm always sort of switching from, you know, where I happen to be in the language that I'm speaking. I've noticed over the years that I have a different, not a different personality, but a different connection to places and ideas depending on the language that I'm communicating in. And that's I think that multiplicity of perspectives is really important to convey in a global film course, because it also includes the intercultural communication that you inherently get from watching a film. You know, there's a deterrent about subtitles, but there's so much more beyond the subtitles once you dig, you know, into the subtext of the actual film. And connecting to that is something we do as humans. And so I feel like uncovering those perspectives is something that, you know, I maybe have a little bit of, you know, a leg up in that sense, just because I have had the chance to sort of be, you know, around the world and not necessarily adhere to just one perspective. And I think my students pick up on that as well, you know, and that really makes for an interesting course because they bring that same, the questions that they might not want to ask in a situation where they feel too comfortable. This is a situation where they feel a little bit uncomfortable, so they get the chance to ask some questions, which opens it up a lot. It's always really fun.
Well, so that's definitely a kind of learning experience that would not be possible without the technology that we have today. You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. Our guest this half hour is Nina Mondre-Schweppe. She has been talking about a course that she taught online, and she ultimately, under COVID, ended up teaching several of all of her courses online. So, Nina, you had some of that previous experience, but a lot of the professors and instructors at MSU did not. What kind of challenges did they face?
I mean, I think it really, it is really true. There is, you know, it is very different to go from teaching in person to go straight from, you know, classroom setting that, you know, professors have been comfortable in the last 30 years right. to an online right. setting. And some of the challenges were technological, of course, and others were sort of preserving the presence in the classroom that they might have enjoyed in person. Sometimes that translates really well into an online setting, especially when we're talking about a synchronous course. And then the other thing that's really intentional in an online course is the presence in an asynchronous course. Where does the instructor come in? And, you know, that takes a little bit of time to kind of cultivate who you are in an online setting versus who you are in an in-person setting. So I think some of those challenges kind of came up, you know, really quickly, sort of as we were transitioning. And, you know, there is really a huge difference between a seminar size class, so let's say 20 students, versus a lecture style class with 150 students. And, you know, in order to keep the connection and to keep the interest of a student for, let's say, 90 minutes in an online scenario is very different than, you know, being animated in front of the class and being in person. So those are some of the challenges that I think a lot of professors and instructors faced. And the nice thing about the Center for Faculty Excellence was that each department sort of had a number of instructors or professors who were more, you know, accustomed to teaching online, who stepped in to kind of give tips and tricks to those who maybe hadn't done a lot of that. And it felt like, even though it was stressful and there were challenges, that there was also a sense of community in that time that made it all happen. And we all got to the end of the semester relatively unscathed. And, you know, for the most part, the evaluations were really good. And everybody was really, you know, understanding. There was a lot of compassion for what everybody was going through. You know, the issues that, excuse me, the issues with technology, not everybody has an internet connection that's, you know, strong enough to withstand, you mm-hmm. know, the kinds of things that we were doing online that we'd never had to do before. Or, you know, having 150 people on the same, you know, WebEx training yeah. at the same time. Those sorts of things, you know, we sort of were creative and we improvised. And it was really miraculous to see that sort of community effort.
Well, I did see, I was looking at the website for the Center for Faculty Excellence, and I saw that there were, I saw not only, you know, the staff members and what they did listed, but I also saw individual professors and instructors who put their names and emails up there and their contact information saying, you know, you can contact me if you need help. I'm willing to try to help. So I see yeah. what you're saying about the sense of community. What about, though, I mean, there are some courses like laboratory courses. What happened with those?
I don't know too much of the detail of what happened with those, but I do know that there was a push to keep the laboratories going, but in a different sense. So some laboratories still had in-person meetings, but very contained, and those were very few and far between. They had to be absolutely essential. For the freshmen that I taught who were in labs and bigger labs or part of their programs, especially in engineering and in chemistry, they still were involved in the labs, but used the data itself and didn't necessarily go through with the lab work like they would have otherwise. So it posed a challenge. And I think for some, it also took away the fun part of being in a lab.
Right. Mixing stuff up in a beaker and putting it on the Bunsen burner. Right. You can't do that. Well, you mentioned freshmen. So how would you say, and we'll get to grad students eventually, but how would you say this impacted freshmen in particular?
I mean, you know, freshman year is a very transitory year to begin with. I mean, there's so many things that happen from September all the way to, you know, May, life changes, perspective changes, ideas about what to do in the future changes. And so I think COVID was an extra added challenge, but it also, you know, the dunk. It also showed how important it was to connect and how important it was for those students who had built their connections over the course of the first few months to be able to say, like, this is actually what I'm getting out of my experience at college, something that they wouldn't necessarily have had the chance to reflect on in the same way. And the other thing that it also, for a lot of my students, I don't know about the freshmen as a general group, but for a lot of the students that I had, going back home in the middle of the semester was a sort of double-edged sword. There's a nice part about being at home and being a part of the family again in a way that they might not have spent as much time together as a family. And then also the sort of like, okay, that's enough now. I'd like to go back to my regular life. And, you know, this life that I've built for myself that was different from my high school life at college. So I think there was a lot of growing up that happened on the part of the freshmen, you know, just in that short time. And you know, it's kind of nice to connect with them. Some of my students now who are back and they're, you know, they're perfectly happy to be back on campus as long as it's safe. So I think there's a realization there as well.
So I'm actually cracking up that we heard your dog, and since we're on Zoom, now I just saw your dog crawling over your lap, and listeners, she has a large dog. This is not like a toy poodle. And I love that that's happening while we're talking about going to teaching and learning online, because I think during the work at home period, many of us got to know our coworkers' pets, because the pets were always like jumping into the Zoom. So it's perfect that your dog is there. Let me ask about graduate students then, because this would have had a different impact on them than it would on freshmen.
Yeah, I mean, it is really interesting to see the contrast. Like you mentioned, I have been working with the graduate school at MSU on this National Science Foundation grant. It's a study that tracks the graduate experience with COVID. And what is kind of revealed is some of the underlying conditions that have always been there. Racial disparities, food insecurities, housing insecurities, some of the fundamental, needs have been sort of revealed with COVID and kind of exacerbated. And those include also, mental health challenges and, considerations about the future in general. I mean, this is a time of extreme uncertainty that everybody is going through globally. That's something that some of the challenges that have existed haven't necessarily been felt globally in the same way. This is sort of revealed that. The study itself, though, has sort of tracked to see what happens to a graduate program in a time like COVID. Is there still the same motivation to go forward and to go through with a graduate degree? Is there, that we didn't have the chance in 2008, 2009 to kind of track what happened to graduate studies or students during the economic crisis. But this is a chance to kind of track some of those things in a similar way. In this case, it's a pandemic, but in a way, it's also tracking the trauma that students go through that affects every aspect of their lives, you know, graduate students with families or children, and how that's affected their studies, you know, whether or not they will be continuing with their studies, how graduate schools are you know, handling the trajectory of graduate studies post-COVID, especially given the challenges that higher ed faced and is facing as a result. So that's been really interesting as well, to see the outcome of that. There's actually an article that's being published in the Chronicle about the study that should come out in the next couple of days or so.
Oh, perfect timing. So this show will air on Labor Day. So the article should be out around the same time. I'd like to go back to what you were saying a little bit earlier. I mean, COVID has, you know, it's become a truism that it's revealed to a wider public some of the racial and class disparities, not only in terms of who gets exposed and even who dies, but in terms of learning opportunities. Could you spend a few minutes and just talk us through in a little bit more detail some of the various kinds of issues that students have come up across?
One major aspect, especially for rural communities like the ones we have in Montana, is access to internet, and access not just to internet, but when you consider, you know, an entire family having to share bandwidth in order to be able to work from home or to study from home, that's definitely a question about having adequate internet reach communities. And again, I mean, that is also very related to, you know, whether or not there is even an internet connection at home. In that sense, it's very different from an urban community in that sense, and maybe not as starkly obvious a class difference, but it does definitely make a difference in the access to technology that makes this possible. And in that sense, it also makes clear that access to technology is really limited to the centers that have the technology. You know, MSU is very lucky that way. But with, you know, with everybody, you know, going to their own communities, it's not necessarily, there's no access to the labs or to the libraries or to the technology that would make the communication and the collaboration possible. Some of the other issues that have come up definitely has been childcare. Students who have children have been forced to consider, you know, at times which, you know, whether work comes first or whether childcare comes first, and that's not a position anybody wants to be in. And some of the other, you know, financial impacts have been far and wide as well. Yeah.
And in addition, I would think in terms of like whatever bandwidth you may have in a home and multiple people trying to get online, also the physical space you may have in a home, I would think could be, you know, not everybody has a room of one's own where they can spend their day studying, you know, could be a lot of people at the kitchen table.
No, absolutely. And it also adds an added stress if you do have to, you know, if you are in a synchronous class, for instance, and everybody can kind of see what's in your home and what you can see what is in everybody else's home, and that creates...
I didn't even think of that.
There are ways to, you know, to change your background, but some of those have only come up later. You know, they exist now. But it was definitely something that, you know, not everybody had the same sort of means, and not everybody wanted to show that necessarily, sure. Or even be on camera. Yeah, sure.
This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. Our guest this half hour is Nina Mondre-Schweppe. So, Nina, the students are back now, right? My understanding is that it's a mix. Like some courses are online, some are in person, some are half-half. So how is all that working out?
It's definitely challenging, you know, to kind of the logistics of having you know, the AB model is what it's called. So basically you have half of the students in your class in person, and then the other half is not in person, and then that switches. And for everybody to be on the same page, to know exactly when they need to be in person or online, is a bit of a dance, and it's a bit of a challenge to make sure that works. In the first few weeks, they're just sort of getting used to the schedule and making sure that everybody knows where they need to be and how that's communicated. And students seem generally pretty happy with the way it's going. I think the freshmen, I'm only teaching freshmen this semester, they're really happy to be in person. I think this is making a huge difference for their college experience. You know, a lot of students didn't get their graduation. Yeah. They didn't get exactly what they'd hoped as the sort of first year in college, and all of the celebrations that go along with it. So, I mean, it is working. It's definitely not perfect. There are so many resources at MSU that, you know, are supporting faculty to help, you know, with whatever needs to happen, you know, especially in sort of coordinating hybrid and blended learning techniques, and as well as students, for students to feel like they have a connection and they have resources and they can, you know, they have people they can go to if there's anything that they need.
Are there certain tips that you give faculty for how to support their students to make it as successful as possible for them?
I mean, that there are a number of them, but I think the main ones are really be compassionate. I mean, at this point, it is just so necessary to have that human connection and to know that we're all doing the best that we possibly can, and that students aren't necessarily going to be able to cram as much as they might have been able to cram into an hour, that, you know, we all need to kind of take it step by step, and that compassion will go a long way. So I think is probably the main thing. We all have to be a little bit easier on ourselves and to know that we're doing the best that we can. And as far as, you know, daily tips, I really have to point to the Center for Faculty Excellence. Is we're really trying to find out what we can do to best support faculty to make sure that the students are getting what they need, and that this is working. And, you know, to remind each other that this is not a normal year. It's a pandemic. You know, it comes with its stressors on top of the normal, you know, beginning of the year stressors, the midterm stressors. And so there's really, you know, to sort of breathe and remember to take it one step at a time is really the main thing.
Well, I like your message of compassion, and I am glad to know that there are so many resources. Nina Mondres-Shreppy, thank you so much for joining us. I've enjoyed learning about the Center for Faculty Excellence and hearing about your personal experience and particularly the global film class you teach. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You can hear Body Politic on the first and third Monday of every month at 1 p.m. on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. Links to most shows are available at kgvm.org, so you can listen anytime.